morning. As you can see, the reading is from Matthew 4, verses 8 to 11, and it's the final part of the temptation of Jesus. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. "All this I will give you," he said, "if you will bow down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, 'Worship the Lord your God and serve him only.'" Then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him.
I'm not particularly bothered about this, but I think there's a football match that starts at 12:45. Of course, Coventry were very sensible. They played on Saturday. And didn't they smash Wolves? Only just. For those of you who were following it, they scored twice in 10 minutes of extra time. But they did win. So I'm quite content to stay here till 12:45, but I have a feeling you won't be, so I'm going to skip through. Probably need to switch it on first. I'm going to skip through quite a bit. You remember that we're involved in looking at the temptations of Jesus as part of our growing understanding of change and the fact that change is impacting us. You're probably fed up with this, but we thought about at one point four different kinds of change: development, transition, chaos and transformation. And I suggested some time ago that actually the chaotic phase for Jesus was when he was being tempted, and it was chaotic for us as well. With chaos, you're never quite sure what's going to happen next, are you? Is the tornado going to sweep your house away, or is it going to go down the next street and miss you out altogether? The time of temptation for Jesus was a critical time for him. A time of change. It was a time when everything could have gone wrong for him. We have to take it seriously. This wasn't just some act on the stage where we know the outcome. This was real. The fate of our world, if not our universe, hung in the balance when Jesus was going through these temptations. We didn't know it. The disciples didn't know it because they hadn't become disciples. But I think Jesus, and certainly Satan, knew what was at stake in these moments. 40 days of fasting, followed by we don't know how long, this time of temptation. The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. I wanted to begin by having a sort of pub quiz with you, how many empires you could think of. But we didn't have time for the fun of it. So you're just going to get it straight between the eyes today. But I went on, you have to, don't you, these days, go on Google, and there are 40 empires listed between 1000 BC and now. And some of the empires are not, there's not even a mention of the United States. Well, I suppose it's not an empire, even though they have the Empire State Building. But it is really an empire, isn't it? A vast conglomeration of power. So there are all these empires that stretch 3,000 years at least. The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world. Now, possibly that just means he showed him all the powerful kingdoms that were around at the time, but that's not what it says. It says he showed him all the kingdoms of the world. What a time that must have been. When he saw the glorious architecture, when he experienced the profound thoughts that went on in different empires, when he got a taste of the variety of religions that appealed to people, when he was mesmerized by the beauty of language, whether Greek or English or Welsh. Jesus experienced it all at once, like the concentration of the sun's rays by a great telescope. He heard the music, he saw the art, he felt the passion, he felt the rationality, he experienced the journey of science. The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. It's interesting, if you go to Luke's version, it's the second temptation in Luke's gospel, it talks not only about the splendor or the glory, it talks about all the authority and splendor. What a vision. Of course, Satan didn't show him everything. He may have shown him all the kingdoms of the world, but he didn't show him everything because he didn't show him the cost. He didn't show the cruelty of the Assyrian armies marching southward and destroying everything in their wake. He may have shown him the terracotta army put there by a ruler who couldn't face death and wanted to be protected in the underworld, but he didn't show him the violence and pressure that those who made those terracotta warriors lived under. He may have shown him the success of science and how Jesus would have been thrilled, wouldn't he, to see medical science, because one of Jesus' passions was to heal people. Whenever he saw a human need, whether it was of the heart or the body or the mind or the emotions, Jesus wanted to heal. And as he surveyed the medical advances of the last 120 years, his heart would have been lifted. He saw all the splendor of the kingdoms, but he wasn't showing the pain, the torture chambers, the destruction of bombs, the crumbling of buildings, maybe the catastrophe that is even now embracing our world because of scientific achievement. He didn't show him those. He just showed him the splendor, the glory. And that's one of the things always to be aware of when temptation comes around us, that Satan will only show us the benefits, the beauty, the attractiveness, and not the destruction, not the death, not the pain, not the broken relationships, not the torn hearts that go with it, if we choose Satan's path. He showed him all the good things, but not the bad. But what an incredible offer. All this I will give you. What would we say if Satan said that to us? Euro millions, you can have it. It's nothing. 30, 40 million pounds. You can have it. Do what you like with it. But that's only a breadcrumb of what I want to offer you. That's what he said to Jesus. All this I will give you. But of course, wrapped up in those words are a lot of lies. You see, was it his to give? He's called the ruler of this world. But giving the world to others is not in his gift. He can only do whatever he does because God has granted him permission for a time. He doesn't own the world. He doesn't own the kingdoms, the empires. He just pretends he does to tempt us. All this I will give you. Is that how it works out when Satan gives us things? No. As soon as we think we've got it, he snatches it away. Whatever it is, as soon as we think through surrendering to him, going his way, we will benefit from him, as soon as it's within our grasp, it's gone. Because Satan is the arch deceiver. That's what he's best at, alluring us and dropping us, promising us and snatching it away. He would never actually have given it to Jesus, even though he promised he would. But it wasn't only an incredible offer, there was an incredible cost to get it. If you will bow down and worship me. Sounds okay, doesn't it? Worship. It's what we're made for. It's a good thing to worship. I'm glad you've come to church this morning to worship, to sing songs, to drink coffee, good coffee here. I can take you to some churches where it's not so good. Meet with one another. Show love to each other. Come and worship. It's a good thing to do. I'm not asking you to do anything bad, Jesus. I only want you to worship. Worship me. And that's another clue that we can take away from this series as we navigate our way through change. That it often seems he's not asking us to do something wrong or wicked or obviously evil. He's not asking us to kill anybody. He's asking us to worship him. To just make me the priority in your life. To just let me, Satan, become... I'm only acting, by the way. I hope. Let me be the guiding light. Let me direct your paths. I know my way around the world. I'll direct your paths for you. Just follow my plans. Worship me. That's all I want, Jesus. Nothing hard. But that would have broken Jesus. And that would have destroyed every one of us. You've probably heard this quote, all power tends to corrupt. Normally we leave out the tends to. An absolute power corrupts absolutely. Do you think that's true? Or do you think it's false? So at heart, what was this temptation about? Well, it was about world domination. It appeared that Jesus was being given the opportunity to rule the world. Surely he could have made a much, much better job of it than most of the rulers we know about. Not just thinking of Hitler, but the better rulers. Jesus could have done it better than that. It was offering him glorious prestige, a sense that he was where he should be in people's estimation. All the splendor of all the empires would be given to him. And that's what he deserved, indeed. Every knee shall bow. All the elders would all fall down and proclaim how great he is. He was going to get it now from Satan. Why wait any longer? It would make him feel tremendous. It would appeal to his pride. How satisfying. But all of this belongs to me. And it would have given him infinite power. It appeared. Power that he could have used for good. To relieve the famine. To ensure there were no sick. That the ambulances didn't have to wait outside the hospital anymore. Why not? Well, because at heart, it's the question of who really rules. And it's about Satan's way or the rules of God's kingdom. It's interesting that in Luke's gospel, these temptations are followed immediately by Jesus going to the synagogue in Nazareth and saying, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor, to set the prisoners free, to heal the sick, and take care of those who are wounded. If you will bow down and worship me." What's the alternative? That's the alternative. It's the cross. From the moment Jesus said no to Satan, he was on a road that led to crucifixion. In a way, I'd love to move this and put it here, because it should be the centre of our thinking about temptation. "You've only got to bow down and worship me." It'd be so much easier than going to the cross, being rejected, abused, criticised, condemned, all those lies told about you. You can avoid it all. You don't want Judas, one of your disciples, to betray you, do you? You can avoid all of this pain. You don't have to hang there naked, being mocked by the crowd. That's not for you, Jesus. Go my way. It's so much easier, so much better. Jesus didn't say, "Well, very interesting offer you're making, Satan. Let's sit down and negotiate. It's not exactly clear what you're offering me. I think we need to get some points clear, and I'd like it all in writing so there's no doubt about it. What you're offering and what you're asking for, then maybe we can do a deal." Jesus didn't hang around. What did he do? He said, "Away from me, Satan. Be gone. Never, ever negotiate with Satan. He is the father of lies. He deceives. He can make promises he knows he doesn't have to keep. Never let him hang around in your mind or your heart. Be gone, away." That was how Jesus dealt with him, and he also dealt with him by telling him the truth. "It is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." There's no alternative. And Satan's temptations will come to us in many forms. We might be tempted, well, if I pay cash, so the people helping me avoid VAT, I've got extra money I can give to charity. Sounds sensible enough. Is it Satan's way or ours? When we go for a job interview, well, we don't exactly lie. I'm sure this didn't apply to you anyway. Just to make it clear, I wasn't there, I don't know, but I have every confidence. Some people lie. But maybe we skirt around the truth when we're asked a question. Nothing wrong with that, is there? Not really lying. Is it okay? Is it not? Couldn't I do a lot of good if I got this position? Help my family, give us security, but I could do a great job. I know I'm the person for it. Do I really have to be absolutely honest, even if I'm not being dug about for it? Or we can use our charm, if we've got any, and our sympathy to build relationships which are not of God. We can use our position, our authority, in an ungodly way. There are so many ways in which this offer that was made to Jesus uniquely is also reflected in our day-to-day experience. If I get angry, I might get my own way. If I'm more pushy, I'll get an advantage. So many ways. And Satan is saying to us, I'll give you if you let go of the ways of God and put me first. And if we know that that's happened to us, what do we need to do? Well, I think we need to recognize it, first of all. It's not always easy in human life to know it. We need to ask God to show us where we may have slipped up and put Satan first. I think we need to not just recognize it, but become straight with God and say, I have sinned against you. You only have I sinned. We need to see it for what it truly is, not allow Satan to mesmerize us, and ask God to give us clear vision. And having recognized it, realized its reality, acknowledged it before God, we can embrace his forgiveness for whatever it is. Because that's God's way. It's God's way because Jesus said to Satan, no, no matter what it costs, I love these people so, so much that I will die for them. I will be destroyed for them. I will lose my identity for them so that they can know God's love in all its fullness. Ever done any of that? Or will we use our power, the gifts we have, the positions we have, the experience we have, the character we have, not for our advantage, but to serve our Lord? I gave you a question. The only absolute power, I suggest, which does not corrupt is the power of absolute love. But the place of absolute love is always the cross. There was no escaping it for Jesus. He knew the choice he was making 3 years before it happened, when he faced Satan, who said, "I will give you all this if you will worship me." It's either that or a cross. And he chose the cross because he chose the way of absolute love. And today, as we reflect on this temptation, we need to ask ourselves, do we recognize that the way of Jesus is always the way of absolute love? But before that, we need to ask ourselves, have we experienced his absolute love? A love which embraces us when, unlike him, we've heard the tempter say, "I'll give you if you worship me." And we've said, "Okay, it's easier that way. It's easier until we look in the eyes of Jesus, as Peter did, and he remembered the words of the Lord, and he wept." Do we need to weep today? Because we haven't always lived the life of absolute love. Or do we need to look again in the eyes of Jesus and know he loves us absolutely?